Paul DeTino and Roman Oben with you. 201-939-4513 is our phone number, or hashtag Giants Chat if you prefer to reach us on Twitter. As the Giants continue their preparations to face the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday, both teams 2-2. Roman, before we do anything else, we should probably update the injury report. The Giants just went out to practice literally a few minutes ago, and for the first time all season, Tom Coughlin had all 53 eligible players at practice yesterday. Nobody was on the bikes, Roman.
Hey,
Everybody's working.
That's awesome. That is very encouraging to see that, especially now you're at the quarter pole, right? Four weeks into the season, you're going into week five. You know, the training camp lingerers. I mean, even guys like James Brewer, I know he hasn't really been a factor this year. I mean, you want those guys practicing. You want those guys preparing either to win or to help the starters win. And to see that no one's out, considered out for this game, that's just a positive step in what a team needs to do to really contend at the end of the year.
Okay, guys who were limited yesterday, John Beeson, Odell Beckham, Devon Kennard, and Steve Weatherford. Now, here's the deal. Weatherford, they're going to manage his ankle injury throughout the course of the season, so he's going to be limited, may even take a few practices off here and there.
Right.
He thinks he's going to be able to get through the season. And that's good news because, let's face it, the Giants want him. Kennard, hamstring issue. I don't know if they need him against the Falcons, Roman, because the Falcons are not a very strong power between the tackles rushing kind of team. Maybe, just maybe, again, he's still limited. They might be better off keeping him out another week.
Yeah, and I think with Devon Kennard, in addition to, you know, Odell Beckham, not Beeson, but for Devon Kennard specifically, in terms of special teams, I mean, when you get a guy in a fourth, fifth round, a linebacker, what round was he drafted
in? He was a five, I believe.
Yeah, so special teams, the contribution on special teams, it really becomes that role right away. And, you know, rookie, young guy, can still run. That special teams, that kickoff return.
So against Hester, you want him out there then this week?
Yeah, you want him out there.
You want to push him out.
He's a physical guy. He can hit. Obviously, the medical determination has to has to be determined. But, again, for Devon Kennard, you know, where the linebackers are at this point, they're playing well enough and they're healthy enough to help this team win. And when you get a healthy Beeson and you get a healthy Devon Kennard, that's only going to make that linebacking core better. I mean, it's been a long time. Giants fans, player, everyone's been screaming for, like, quality linebacker play. Mm-hmm. Now we have some, and we have guys that aren't even in there, and the linebackers are still doing exceptionally well.
You mentioned Beeson moments ago, so let's go right to the two stars of the show. That would be Beckham and Beeson. Now, as far as Beeson's concerned, that aggravated toe injury bothers him much more when he plays on artificial turf than it does on real grass. Now, the Giants are going to be home this weekend, which means back to the plastic. The thing with Beeson is the Giants want to get him healed up enough to where they can manage him and keep him in the lineup. The last thing they want, Roman, is for him to wind up being a seesaw. He's in 1 week, he's out two.
Right.
He's in a week, he's out two.
Right.
That's what they're trying to avoid. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that or not because the toe is a tricky thing.
Yeah, and it would be a travesty if Beeson would give you less contributions as he did this time last year only because he got traded in week five and he only had 11 games to give you. But again, you have to manage it. You have to make sure he's healthy. And if this team can put themselves in a position where they will be playing in January, you want Beeson in the critical times of the year.
Oh, sure.
Again, he came off the streets and contributed right away in that Chicago Bears game. And you said, wow, the Giants finally have a sideline-to-sideline person in the middle. But going forward, whatever that number is, if it's 8 healthy games, if it's 9 healthy games, 10 hopefully, you want to make sure you're getting that with no recourse, with no going backwards, as you said. And hopefully this team puts themselves in a position to still be playing football after the 2015 new year. That's when John Beeson is really going to be helpful.
We saved the best headline for last, and that's Odell Beckham, who yesterday was a sprint full-out participant. Limited reps, and let's make it very clear, when the Giants say limited participation in practice, they're not saying that they limited what he did. What they're saying is it was the number of reps that were limited. So when he participated, he was full out.
Right.
And that's the first time the Giants have seen that since he got here. And in fact, talking to Beckham in the locker room after practice, Roman, and you can appreciate this, he was glowing about this post-pattern touchdown pass he caught from Eli, right, where he had to go up in the end zone, reach up, make the catch, and he said that made him feel like he was back. He now feels like he's got what it takes to get out on the field. Now, Tom Coughlin said he needs to see good back-to-back practices out of him, so we need to see what he does today,
right,
before we really start thinking he's going to play. But the anticipation off of what he did yesterday is that full speed ahead, and you will see him at least some in the Atlanta game.
Yeah, and we talked about this yesterday, Paul, in the press conference show. If Odell Beckham can put himself in a position to get on the field, to get reps, you know, let's say if Eli Manning throws 30 passes, if he can get 10 of those where he's running a post pattern and those defenders, that defensive secondary, Atlanta Falcons, saying, all right, this is their number one pick, he's a fast guy, we got to play off a little bit.
Smelling decoy,
right? You take that safety over the top. The Donnells of the world and the intermediate routes and things underneath all are going to open up. If he's able to run a punt return, a kickoff, something, 10 yards, 15 yards, you have to focus it on him. So I think one thing that's going to be the determining factor for me is doing it full speed, making an adjustment, like Coach Coughlin said, during the intricacies of a game, the physical part of it, catching a ball, getting hit, getting tackled on a punt return or something, kickoff return, getting back up and then doing it again without having that lingering effect. Again, the difference between a Wednesday practice, Thursday practice is obviously the recovery.
Sure.
So Friday to Saturday, Sunday, you're really off Friday afternoon, Saturday, Sunday you play. Now, after Sunday, if you're not aggravated by another hamstring issue, if you're not taking these, you're not missing next Wednesday's practice, then he's really back. So in terms of what he's been able to do to this point, this is the healthiest Beckham has been. And then I said this yesterday on the show, for the first time ever, we're talking about Odell Beckham being healthier than John Beeson at this point of the year.
Yeah.
And we never thought that was going to happen.
That's for sure. All right, I'm going to ask you one question before we go to the phones. 201-939-4513 is our phone number. So if you're going to use Beckham effectively as a decoy, at the very least, because I don't know how much he's going to actually produce, but even if you use him as a decoy, don't you have to throw him a deep ball early in the game to plant that seed in the Falcons' minds so that maybe the next time or next three or four times he's out on the field, they're thinking and reacting to it? Because if you don't get it to him right away early, then there's no intimidation factor from his speed, right?
Right, but again, I mean, you look at Sammy Watkins in Buffalo. You look at these young receivers that come out, all they can run early on is some of these post patterns. Let's take advantage of young guy's speed, throw the ball. Eli Manning throws a football, he's going to expect him to catch it. I mean, you don't just run a post just to run it. I mean, if you're open, if you got two steps on a defender, Eli Manning's going to try to find a target.
Well,
his first catch might be a 50-yard touchdown.
I'm not saying to throw it away. What I'm saying is, though, show him deep early because that creates the decoy factor that you're talking about.
Oh, 100%. And if he can connect,
that'd be even better.
Then the Giants have a number one receiver threat on the perimeter. This whole notion of taking the top off of defense is demanding safety help over the top. You talk about the new pass interference rules where at 4.9 yards, your hands better be off that offensive player or else the flag's coming. And if you're the worst thing to do as a defensive player is to see a guy in a game that there's no film on him, there's no preseason, you don't know what he can do. And if that guy comes in and catches the ball, he's gone.
That's an eye-opener.
He's gone.
Yeah.
Again, so all those things, you know, in addition to just the maturation of this offense, the maturation of a Larry Donnell, you know, Victor Cruz had a 100-yard game. We can't understate
that. Nice catch and run the other night against
I mean, Victor
the Redskins.
Cruz, you know, he's back to a certain degree, even Reuben Randall. So, again, it all starts to formulate well. The offensive line is blocking well. The running game, you know, 193 against Houston, you know, not as good against Washington, but you're seeing the ability to run the ball well. And if you add Odell Beckham to this offense, the world is the oyster, if you will, in terms of what they can do this season.
D, we're going to get to you in just a second. I only want to make one final point, and that is I've been telling people all along that Becker would probably make his first contribution to the Giants as a punt returner.
Right.
I'll tell you what. Eli has been studying overtime with Beckham, trying to coach him up now for the last week or so, and I'm getting the impression that he knows enough of the playbook that Eli's comfortable with him running some of those routes, and he may get more of a taste of the offense than I originally thought. Because in my mind, I'm thinking punt return, a lot easier to handle that mentally than it is knowing the playbook.
Well,
but Eli's coaching him up.
Yeah, and also, this isn't preseason. I mean, this isn't – he's still learning. He's been in every meeting. He's been in every rep. He's been on the sideline.
Coach said that the other day.
Yeah, so he should have a full understanding of the offense right now, even without – it's just the physical part has to catch up now.
Let's see if he can get out there. Be fun. Yep. All right, let's go to D from Atlanta. You are first on the show. Hello.
Hey, how y'all doing? Good afternoon.
Good to talk to you.
What's up, D?
Hey, I want to make two quick points. First off, I'm sitting here. I was watching the first take, and I see T.J. Humazada bashing Eli. And I have a question. Why doesn't he get the respect a two-time Super Bowl champion gets?
Before you go anywhere, what did he say to bash Eli? What was the criticism?
Well, I'm not going to say really bash him, but he says what everybody else says. They'd rather have Romo because basically just saying Eli – you know, the Tyreek catch, it was lucky. Basically saying Super Bowls were lucky. The one for the D-line and all that, which I understand is ultimate
two,
team.
Two sport. Super Bowls were lucky, right? Two?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure I get it.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, why doesn't he get that respect? They're saying if his last name was the Manning, he wouldn't, he would have been benched this year already. Which I'm wondering, why doesn't he get the respect the two-time Super Bowl champion should get?
You know, it's funny. Thank you, D, for the phone call. It's funny. I'm good friends with T.J. Humazada. He's a great guy. He's got two daughters. They're actually the same exact age. We joke about them going to prom together.
So get him on the line and beat some sense into the man, will you?
Well, you know, with these national shows, they don't have the intricate knowledge that we have in terms of seeing these guys every day, going to practice. You just kind of say it, that stuff, and you put it out there, but – you know, no one expects, you've got to have general knowledge about all 32 teams, and it's all the same plug-and-play comments about Eli Manning.
You know what I call it, Roman? Highlight film knowledge. Because a lot of people just see the SportsCenter clips, and they see the interceptions or the fumbles or the touchdowns, for that matter, and that's all they know about a player.
And in all honesty, nationally, the perception is that Eli Manning always gets a pass because his last name is Manning. Any quarterback that throws 27 picks, you're drafting another quarterback in the first, second round the next year. You're putting him on the hot seat. But the truth of the matter is, on one end, you can't change history. When Eli Manning had great pass protection, a good running game, a solid defense, like any quarterback in the NFL wants, he excelled. When he had receivers and people who knew the offense and they had cohesion between the groups, you could talk about the catch all you want in 07, the 07 season, or Mario Manningham's catches 2 feet. I mean, that's the difference between winning and losing in the NFL. It's 6 inches, 3 inches, and 1 inch, having a foot inbound. So that's the difference. But on the other side, Paul, the criticism always will come from the fact that the Giants have not consistently put on a 11-5, 12-4 season in terms of the product. The product hasn't consistently been 11, 12 wins a year, Pro Bowl seasons, 30 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Right. For Eli Manning to be considered day in and day out one of the better ones, that's the way it's got to be. Again, so you can't change history. And, you know, we're not homers on the show. We're just stating the facts. The criticism is because of that. So when you listen to First Take and you listen to these ESPN shows and Eli's an anomaly. He's the only quarterback with two Super Bowl MVPs who's not consistently good every year like these other guys. That's actually true. That's true. Take away those years, the regular season – haven't been great. But when he had good protection early in his career, he had offensive linemen that were all self-starters. You had Bradshaw, Jacobs. I mean, you know these teams, Paul. When this team went into some transitions and some of these draft picks didn't work out, that affected Eli Manning. When when Nix was underachieving, Hakeem Nix was underachieving, when you know, Manningham wasn't on the same page. Go back to that Chicago game last year.
But you know what, Roman?
It wasn't working. When tight ends weren't catching the ball, and you know, that's a result of everybody doing their job, not just Eli Manning. So he's got a lot of high accountability, and no one's going to argue about that. And no one wants to win more than Eli Manning. But
that's
this
for sure.
Isn't about – this thing with – this isn't about Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, who's the best top five. Nobody cares. But in this building, in this organization, the only thing that matters is that – the organization feels strongly that number 10 is the man for the job, and that's all that matters.
Let's make this very simple, okay?
And thank you for letting me get on my soapbox.
No, I know, and I feel you where you're coming from. We've talked about this enough of time, so I feel you there. Just that, to me, if people want to get on Eli's case, they're going to find a way to do it because there have certainly been enough bumps in the road where you can find enough to criticize him if you want to. But I'll tell you something else. You could say all you want about the Tyree pass in the first Super Bowl. Maybe he just threw it up there and he was a little bit lucky and, you know, Tyree made him look good. That's fine. But how many quarterbacks on the face of this planet could have made the throw to Manningham in the second Super Bowl?
I can't name one.
He hit the head of a pin.
Right. And if you
want
to have
there's nothing lucky about that throw. That was not just throw it up there. I will not tolerate, and I will defend Eli Manning from here to eternity for that Manningham throw, because that had nothing to do with luck. That was skill to the 100th degree, and I'm telling you, there's probably only three or four people in the world who could have made that throw.
And
Peyton being one of them.
The reality also
Tom Brady maybe being the other.
Is that when you go back to 2011, you go back to those seasons, the discussion was always, I'll take Peyton Manning during regular season, but I'll take Eli Manning in January. So get this man to January, please, and then we'll see how good he is.
We have an Eli from Indiana who wants to talk to us. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, guys. What's up?
What part of Indiana?
I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Naptown. Hey, how we doing?
Speaking of Manningham and the Giants Super Bowl, Indiana, right there.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I've got relatives in
Indianapolis.
So.
Oh, really?
What do you got for us?
I'm just calling to say how excited I am that everybody's finally healthy. I called last week to talk about how, you know, I wanted the Eagles to lose and the Dallas Cowboys to lose so we can tie up or, you know, be closer.
What a stretch, huh? What a stretch. He wants the Eagles and Cowboys to lose.
Well, we want them all to lose every game. We want them to go 2-14. That would be a lot easier for everybody else.
Why not?
But of course, nothing went the way I want. But the Eagles did lose, surprisingly, but the Cowboys, for some reason, blew out the Saints. I'm upset about that. But I was going to call and say how excited, though, our team is. And I was going to say that we need to win this Atlantic game. I believe we have to for us to have a chance to catch up in our division because the Cowboys play. They have an easy game, of course, and so does the Eagles. But I'll say we have to win this game. I want to hear what you guys have to say about what we have to do to win this game. And I want to know you guys' predictions of what the final score will be. And that's it.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for the call. Houston is going to Dallas to face the Cowboys. And you know, we've seen Houston firsthand. They're not a very good team right now.
Right.
But maybe the Texas rivalry can get them souped up, and maybe they'll give Dallas a hard time.
You just don't know.
And Claiborne's out now. For the Cowboys, they lost him
for
the year to a knee injury. So you just don't know. And, of course, Dallas is flying high off their win the other night. So maybe they'll take them lightly. Who knows? Could be a trap game, like they say every once in a while. Washington has Seattle at home on Monday night. And Philadelphia has a Sunday game at home against the St. Louis Rams, who, boy, I don't know if I'd want to be a St. Louis Rams fan these days. That's a pretty tough thing. In terms of this game, let's make it very simple for you in the simplest terms possible. The Falcons offensively are going to be playing with three new offensive linemen. That is a huge problem for them. They do not run the ball very well, and whatever running game they have is speed to the outside. They don't have any power running game between the tackles. Steven Jackson's on the downside of his career. So for them, it's all about Matt Ryan trying to wing the ball out to Jones and to White. That's what it's all about for them, really. They've got to wing it. On defense, they are banged up on defense as well. William Moore is their best defensive player because Weatherspoon, the linebacker, went out in the preseason on injured reserve. So they don't have much of a pass rush, even though O.C. Umanure is there. He doesn't have any sacks yet this season. They don't defend the run real well. And now that Moore's missing from the secondary, they've got problems in the secondary. Where they do have a big edge on the Giants is special teams. Devin Hester is a one-man wrecking crew. We've all known that for years. So Steve Weatherford has to make sure he doesn't touch the ball. It's really that simple.
Right.
That is about the only advantage the Falcons have going into this game. So, yes, do I think the Giants will win? I feel very strongly about it. Do I think they'll win by two scores? Absolutely.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they blew them out, especially since the Falcons have trouble winning on the road outdoors, Roman.
Yeah, and I don't like to I got in trouble in D.C. last week. I called the station and I guess I'm too used to New York radio. I was a little brutally honest about what the Giants would have done, and they called me a homer, and then I was getting attacked by Twitter fans, and I'm from D.C.
Shame, shame.
I grew up in D.C. as a as a Redskins fan as a kid, but I was just very honest, and I was right. So no apologies for Roman. But one thing, I don't predict scores because
scores are crazy.
From a football player standpoint, anything can happen. A ball can get tipped. Linebacker picks it up, runs it back for a touchdown. A punt gets muffed. It touched the back of someone's leg. All those things happen throughout the course of a game.
I don't want to get you in trouble.
Right.
But will you at least admit to me right now, as these two teams stand here today, the Giants are a significantly better team than the Falcons? Can we say that?
Well, the way the numbers add up, the Giants are more favorable if you look at the numbers. But I'm not going to predict this ambiguous 24-17 prediction.
I'm not
that everyone
down for a score.
Oh, Giants 27-14 or 21-17.
From a football perspective, we know who the better team is.
But from a player's perspective, coaches, you still have to go out there and execute.
Darn straight you
for
do.
60 minutes.
Darn straight.
And prove yourself that you're the better team.
Hey.
And you got the – and for defense, offensively, we've got to score points. I've put up 3, put up 7 every time we get down there. So that defense is calling their blitzes, and they're getting the sacks in the fourth quarter, because make those guys throw the football. And they will make some plays. Devin Hester will have a good return. I mean, hopefully not for a touchdown. Julio Jones, somebody's going to make a big play. But you can't let that determine the course of the game.
To your point, the Giants are a better team than the Arizona Cardinals. And there was charity given away by the Giants that day. And that's why the Giants are 2-2 instead of 3-1. You still got to go and play the game.
Right.
And you got to be clean about it, and you got to show improvement every week. I love what Coughlin says. Coach says every week, improve, improve, improve. You got to keep doing it. You got to keep getting better. He's right, because you always want to play your best games in December and January and February, if there is a February.
Because you've almost seen every mistake. You've seen every look.
Exactly.
And then it's almost like a muscle memory, if you will, and that's why the good teams keep getting better in January. You know, they say, play your best football 4 weeks after Christmas, and you're in a Super Bowl.
All right. Jay from Irvington, you're next on the show. Hello. Oh, did he go away? He went away.
Yeah, I wanted to add also
the
Eli from Indianapolis that called. It said, I know fans like to look at other teams and chalk up the wins, and you want these other teams to lose. But
we all do it.
Yeah, it's early in this. It's a little too early in the season to be hoping all these other teams lose in the division, because, one, you still have to play the rest of the division, and you're about 7-8 weeks away from saying, okay, at this point, third quarter of the season, week 12, week 11, you want this team to lose, because now in terms of tiebreakers and two teams go 10-6 and all that type of stuff, that's when you start looking at that. But you just have to take care of your job, and I know it sounds like a cliche, but do your job, take care of your business, and let the rest of the teams, let the rest of the division. Look, the Rams could beat Dallas. They could beat every team in the division. I mean, you never know. I mean, that could be their best 5 games they play this year, but you can't worry about that, and you can't get into the – what the numbers look like going into a game, because anything can happen on Sunday.
To your point, in all the years you played, and Roman played a long time, folks, not trying to date you or anything.
No, that's fine. Hey, I'm proud of the years that I played.
You should be. You damn well should be. Did you ever scoreboard watch in all the years that you played, or did you seriously just focus on your job, your game, what you had to do? I mean, it's okay to admit it now.
You mean the scoreboard watch in terms of looking at what the other games are going on around the league?
Did you ever, during the course of the season, look at where the other teams are, what the standings are, what their scores are, and say, oh, you know what, we really could use them to lose this week because it matters to us? Can you as a human being just put those blinders on and just worry about yourself? Because that's what Coach always wants you to do.
Yeah,
it's hard.
And I'd be lying if I said I never scoreboard watched.
You had to, right?
You have to be aware of what's going on in the league. I mean, you turn on ESPN, you turn on a national show, you open a newspaper or you get an alert on your phone. You know what's going on around the league. If a Tony Romo injures his back at the end of the season and you know you're going to play them week 17 or something happens, that's going to help you saying, okay, we've got a better chance of winning the game. Now we've got to go do our jobs because everything else that we can worry about. So when an Arian Foster, you find out the morning of the game that he's not playing, that gives you a better chance of winning because it makes Fitzpatrick have to throw the ball and have
Absolutely.
To create turnovers. So you are aware of these things, but you can't just say, ooh, I don't have to practice that hard because – this team lost this week. Or
no, I'm not suggesting that.
That's when you get smacked in the mouth.
But absolutely.
Again, instead of scoreboard watching per se, you have to be aware of what's going on or in your division specifically.
More calls. Stas from Washington, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you guys doing today?
Hey,
you're
Stas.
Well. How are you?
Hey, so real quick, I just want to comment on one of the callers that called in. I honestly feel that Eli Manning doesn't get credit because his last name is Manning, because he's always compared to his brother. I think if his last name was Smith, he'd be more celebrated as a quarterback. I mean, people, it scares me on how people look at Eli, because I feel like when his career is all said and done, it's going to affect the voting for the Hall of Fame because of how he looks in the national. But what people don't understand is, like, Eli Manning has thrown more touchdown passes than Steve Young did in his entire career. And Eli Manning ain't even done yet. You know, Eli Manning has more, he's 11th all-time on fourth quarter comebacks. Like, people don't look at that stat. All they want to look at is the bad stuff. And it's just, as a Giants fan, it's frustrating. You want to go out there and slap people across the face sometimes with some real stats, because it's like, pay attention to the entirety of a game, entirety of a career. Yes, the guy doesn't have the best regular season record, and that's fine. But I promise you that Dan Marino, Peyton Manning, and all those great record keepers will give tons of records back for two Super Bowl rings.
Stas,
I guarantee that much.
I understand what you're saying, and here's what I will add, and thanks so much for the call. Roman, when Bill Parcells was here and Phil Simms was doing what he did best, Bill would always sit at the end of the table in the press room with his little cigarette, and he'd sit there and he'd say, take a puff, and he'd turn and, you know what? They're going to miss him when he's gone. They're going to know who Phil Simms was when he's gone, and they're going to appreciate him long after he's gone. And he was right. The Giants fans have learned over the years how good Phil Simms really was when he was here. And
right.
I think the same thing's kind of happening to Eli Manning.
Yeah.
Because it's not until you have a mortal quarterback following a true legend like Phil Simms was, when all of a sudden now you got Kent Graham, you got Dave Brown.
Hey, I block for those guys. I block for
all
Dave
right, you
Brown.
You know what I'm saying?
Kent Graham, Danny
how
Cannell,
much would
and
you
Kerry
have
Collins.
Loved to block for Phil
I
Simms?
I would have loved to block for Phil Simms or an Eli Manning, if
right?
you will. So this argument about Eli Manning has been going on for 10 years. And if there's another guy in his draft class by the name of Phil Rivers who hasn't won a Super Bowl, and he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league year in and year out. He's been on great teams. He's won – I mean, I blocked for Phil Rivers, too. He was 14-2, number one,
yeah.
Lost in the first round. So, at the end of the day, who cares, right? Because you play for the guys next to you, you play for the guys in the locker room, and you let the writers and the voters and the predict – you let all those people determine who's the best, who has a Hall of Fame career. And because the more balls are getting thrown – I mean, quarterbacks have
the numbers
an average
skewed.
Of 10 more
They're
attempts
skewed.
Per game. So,
sure.
Yeah, Eli Manning's thrown more than Steve Young, but Steve Young didn't throw the ball as much as these quarterbacks do now. So you're talking 150 to 200 more attempts on an average, a quarterback now versus a quarterback 20 years ago. So that's not to say it's not a valid argument, but, yeah, Eli Manning just passed Phil Simms, if you will, I think a week or two ago. I don't know if touchdowns, one of those. He's going to break all these
records.
Well,
he's Drew
already
Brees, got
all these guys
are
going to break all these
now.
Records, but.
He's going to Canton.
Yeah,
okay?
I think you have to put an asterisk by some of these records because it's all relative. Passing rules are different. The game is different.
No doubt. No doubt.
That's why I feel bad for, like, guys like, God, receiver in Buffalo. They just got in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, Andre Reed.
Yeah, Andre Reed. I mean, these guys, Irving, I mean, these guys want to hurry up and get in the Hall of Fame because they know the numbers are
yeah.
less compelling because they're throwing the ball a lot
I know
more,
the feeling.
These
sure.
days.
Sure. Sure. All right, anyway, again, I'm going to tell you, I think Eli is going to Canton. Thumbs up, yes or no? Yes, is he going?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about that in 5 years, hopefully, when he retires, when he's got more
years.
Body of work. And
let
more,
him play another few, okay?
Another Super Bowl appearance, hopefully. Then you can look at all his numbers and make the comparisons.
Ed from Houston, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Good afternoon, fellas. How you doing today?
All right, how are
all right,
you?
Thursday.
Yeah.
Good. Paul, I have two things. One for you, a compliment, and then one question for Roman.
Thank you.
Paul, don't say thank you yet. You don't even know what
that's
the compliment
okay.
is.
You were nice enough to call up, and I thank you for that.
Okay, hey, before the season started, you said that the offense would take a while to catch up to the defense, and it was going to be up to the defense and the special teams to hold the thing together until the offense could start to produce.
Right.
And you also said that if the team was at 500 after four games, they would still be in it. As things played out from a month ago, you were dead on, and I wanted to compliment you on that one.
Thank you. My next benchmark is 4-3 at the bye, okay? Which means they got to win two out of the next three games. And if they
yeah.
can go into that break at 4-3, I still think this team is going to be okay.
Okay. Well, that's good. I like that prediction. Hopefully, I'll call you back after that, and
please
I'll
do.
Give you another compliment, hopefully.
Thank you. Go ahead. You got one for Roman.
Yes, sir.
Did we lose him? We lost him. Oh, call us back, okay? Seriously, we'll get you right on. Jamal from Hamilton, you're next. Hello.
Okay, Hey, guys, how you doing? Great show.
Thank you.
Please turn down your radio, your volume, please.
I got it.
Thank you.
Down. Hello?
We're here.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Great show. Just wanted to call in and talk about the offense a little bit. I know it's taken a little while for the offense to come around, but it seemed like it has. But one question, as we're waiting for Odell Beckham to rehab and get back into the game, what about Corey Washington, getting him into the rotation?
Wow. You know,
yeah, we've had that discussion, and I can answer this. I mean, we've had that discussion about Corey Washington. You know, playing in a preseason, you know, what Corey Washington did in preseason, a Division II guy, you know, you're playing against, you know, guys that weren't all starters, weren't going to be starters.
Well, in some cases, fours.
Yeah, threes and fours, guys didn't make the team. And he did well in terms of his improvement to deserve a right to make a spot on this team. But in a Tom Coughlin football team, special teams, being a gunner, covering on kickoff, you know, what you do as a receiver when you don't have a football in your hand. Nobody's going to game plan Corey Washington at this point of his career. Watch out for this guy. He had 5 touchdowns in preseason. We're going to double cover. I mean, that's not going to happen. But will he get better as a football player? Absolutely. Does he have the tools to be a good receiver in the league? 100%. I played with these two young players, one by the name of Malcolm Floyd, the other one Vince Saxon, when I was in San Diego in 2004. These are young. These guys can be good if they just keep getting better,
yeah.
And they did. I mean, they played 10 years.
Sure.
Vince Saxon is still playing in Tampa. Michael Floyd is still in San Diego, and I think I see Corey Washington as that kind of guy. But it's never about getting one guy more reps so he can get in the rotation. It's about the unit, about the team, and it's about the maturation of players as a group. But Odell Beckham, as he gets closer and closer to being 100%, it's he, Victor Cruz, and Ruben Randle, that 1, 2, and 3 on this football team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way
that's
it's supposed
plan.
To be written up. That's the plan. You know, Corey Washington, again, he's going to have to continue to get better and better, contribute on special teams, become a better football player.
Thank you so much for the phone call. I got a scary thought for you, though.
What's that?
When you get in the red zone, now, if you've got Larry Donnell doing what he's doing right
and
now.
We haven't even talked about Larry Donnell.
At 6'6".
Right.
Okay, at 6'6". You throw Washington out there at 6'4". Ruben Randle's only 6'2", but he's got a very long wingspan.
Right.
You're talking about 3 potential targets in the red zone who can all climb the stairs and go get it.
Right.
How many secondaries are going to be intimidated by that height and that reach advantage that the Giants could have at least at 3 different spots in the red zone where Eli can basically say, look, I'm just going to throw it up to one of those 3 guys and they can go get it. So even if you have a 6'1 or 6'2 safety, guess what? I got a bunch of other tall guys who can go get it anyway because your corner's only 5'10". You got no chance to deal with that.
Yeah, and that's why corners and safeties and, I mean, DBs – are becoming taller because they have to keep up with these receivers and these tight ends that are, you know, 6'6", 6'5", or 6'3". But again, to have those type of weapons and then guys that can catch the ball, and everyone talks about this basketball player grabbing a rebound. I mean, look at what Larry Donnell's done the last few weeks. That's all good, trust me. But, again, it's not an anomaly to want to have those kind of targets in the end zone because that's what the rest of the league is doing. So, If Eli Manning has that, it's an advantage. And talk about DBs, not so much from an intimidation standpoint, but it's hard to contest a ball when you're 5'9", 5'10", against a 6'4", 6'6", guy. And let's say you both jump.
Physics.
You both have a 30-inch vertical.
You can't get it.
The other guy still has a 6-inch advantage over you. So, you know, they always talk about the difference between winning and losing is this much. 6 inches, a foot. I mean, that's a big difference.
And the only thing the Giants have had that was close to that is when Burris was here with Boss.
Yeah.
You know, Boss was about 6'7". Burris was about 6'4", 6'5". Mm-hmm. That was 2. Mm-hmm. They got a chance. And, even though Randall's only 6'2", he's got such a long wingspan. He can go up and get it. So I'm thinking that's potentially 3 skyscrapers you could put on the field at once. Ed from Houston, you're back on the line, and I know you want to talk to Roman.
Yeah, I kind of got in the middle of something there. Next thing I know, I was talking to myself.
We lost you. Our apologies.
What do you got?
Well, that's okay. Yeah, I wanted to ask Roman, being a former player,
I'm happy with the progress of the Giants' offense over the past 3 weeks. They looked a little better. You know, Detroit, Arizona, they got progressively better each week, and hopefully that'll continue. But my question for you is, the Giants came back on a short schedule coming off of their Sunday game, 4 days having to go to D.C. They looked like they were ready to play. And I don't think the game with Houston was as physical as what Washington and Philly put up. I watched that game on a replay, and that game had playoff-caliber talent. I mean, they looked like they just beat the living crap out of each other. And my question to you as a former player is, I thought Washington wasn't ready to play, mentally or physically, and I think they were still suffering from the hangover from the Philly loss. And I think the Giants caught them at the right time before they could recuperate, and I think that made the offense look, or the team as a whole, look even better than it really is.
If I may, just before Roman answers this, I want to interrupt you for 1 second because it's true that they had 9 questionable guys on their injury report after Friday's practice going in. Or should I say after Tuesday's practice, they had a walkthrough on Wednesday. They were definitely battered, bruised, and gimpy from the previous weekend's game. The Giants, on the other hand, came through last weekend's game well, going down to Washington. And so the health advantage for Tom Coughlin's crew was rather heavy. I think it's the same going into the Falcons game right now, where the Atlanta Falcons are badly beaten up and the Giants are not. So please speak to that point.
Yeah, and okay. I think if you go back to that Thursday game, both teams have to manage that well. You know, 2 games in 5 days is not easy. You know, with the practice rules, with, you know, the limited contact now, and that helps the team get healthier. But if you've got a string of bad luck and 8, 9 questionable guys, like, you're not going to be in good shape to play 4 days later. I mean, absolutely not. But it's the team that manages it well and takes advantage of it, because you've got a little short mini bye week coming up. Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, you know, get a chance to spend time with family, then come back Monday. Team who manages that well is the team that comes out on top, not only during the game but after the fact. So Washington did not. I think the verdict is still out with the type of team that the Redskins are going to be this year. And if they continue to suffer and RG3 doesn't come back and Kirk Cousins, you know, the stagecoach turns back into a pumpkin, if you will, on his success,
right?
Then people know that Washington Redskins are pretenders, not contenders. But again, Giants fans, players, coaches were glad to see that they managed that 2 games in 5 days better than the Redskins did. Now they're even healthier than they were as a result of the last 10 days.
Ed, did you have one more point? No, he's already gone.
Okay.
I want to add something, though, Roman,
sure,
about the mentality. Going down to Washington on Wednesday before Thursday's game, reading in the papers down there, all that you could find were big stories about the Redskins griping about how they did not enjoy Thursday night football. It was too much for them. They knew they were beaten up and battered. It isn't fair. We don't like it. We don't enjoy it. We're trying. And I'm saying to myself, yeah.
Play the violin.
I'm saying
while
to myself,
sing there.
Why is a head coach, is that even a topic? Tom Coughlin nipped it in the bud on Monday morning after the Giants played the week ago Sunday.
Right.
He got on the conference call and he said, look, it is what it is. I've delegated my new schedule. We've got 3 days of jog-throughs. I'm going to take it easy on the guys. I know what I have to do to manage the team. That's it. Case closed. There was not one comment made further by Tom Coughlin or his players about, woe is me, we have to play in another 4 days. None of that.
Well,
because
that's
the mentality is, we got business to do.
And a brand new head coach.
There you go.
Who's got a job. And I know Jay Gruden very well. He was an assistant at... He was a Louisville guy like me. He was an assistant at Tampa Bay under his brother when I was there with the Bucks. And obviously, you know, we've communicated all through. But a newer head coach won't manage that as well as a tenured head
coach.
And
he did not.
No,
he did not. You got to shut that down. And
yeah.
Tom Coughlin knew what he was doing. Here's a case where already on Monday he was out coaching his opponent. I'm telling you that right now.
And, Paul, don't forget, I mean, 4 years ago, before everyone had to play a Thursday night game, the Giants went to Denver on a Thursday, a Thanksgiving. Remember that, 2010? And it got beaten pretty badly.
I know.
So this is a no more excuses. Let's deal with it. And that's the mark of a veteran coach, a veteran
you
team.
You can't have your team talking about it.
Guys that just stay focused at the task at hand.
You can't have your team talking about it.
Right.
And that was, to me, that was another sign going into the game where I'm like, the Giants have already another advantage on their plate.
Right.
I want to go to some chat questions here that are on the internet before we go to the next call. We have a John Killian at Sienna 16 says, I don't want to hear anything about Beckham playing until I see it with my own eyes from Section 306.
Must be from Missouri, the show me state, huh?
I just hope he has a pair of binoculars if he's in 306. Okay? We have here, let's see. We have Coach seems confident that Beckham knows the playbook. So says Joe JCS0-2008. He says he's concerned about him grasping the on-the-field audibles and checks. Well, again, that's why Eli's been coaching him up the last week or so, for sure. We have Anthony Phoenix, who says, ask Tom Brady and Bill Belichick if they respect Eli and the Giants. Got a feeling they do a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's see here. What else do we have? Ben Kobayu says, well said, Roman, exactly. Paintbrush analysts might as well be not be analysts. NFL mobile people are just NFL tabloids. Ben also says, when Eli has time to throw and receivers read and run the right route and catch the ball, he is sharp and unstoppable. All right, we have Jamal Green says, as Beckham is trying to get healthy, why don't the G-men add Corey Washington to the rotation? We've already talked about that. Let's see, what do we have here? Adam Chaudhry says, Eli plays the best football on the biggest stages. I'll trade an average season for extraordinary postseasons.
Right.
No argument there either. SNF Mikey says, there are no easy games in the NFL. And you're right. There are none. Tom Coughlin will tell you that 1,000 times a day if you'll listen to him.
Yeah, and you talk about the Rams or some of these teams at the bottom of the – I mean, you never want to be a team that wakes up a team that should be that you're outmatched by.
Just play. Go do your job.
Talk about the offensive line. You can talk about the injuries in Atlanta and all that stuff, their road record. You just want to make sure you're executing, and that's not a factor.
All right, Jermaine in Richmond says, great point. Roman, that's why I wanted a new offense. This offense is much more efficient. It will give Eli consistent numbers. He says that was the downside of Gilbride's offense, too much inconsistencies with big plays and low completion percentage. We have here, Beat the Falcons says this is going to be a slam dunk win. Okay. Jay Smith says, tell TJ 2007 playoff run. And he quotes Eli's stats during the postseason. He wants you to pass that along to Usman Sada. I don't think he needs to know. I think you've already very clear.
You ask me about the Seahawks right now, and I'll talk about Russell Wilson in the running game.
Exactly.
I won't. I mean, I don't cover the Seahawks. So
we don't see them every day.
We get it. We totally get it. And good job, fans. I know you do it, Paul. I do. Fans are always welcome to mention me, R_OBEN, or at your Giants, WFAN.
Right.
For Dottino. I mean, I respond to fans all the time when they ask.
We do what we can.
Yeah,
we try.
Unless I'm in a meeting or I can't get to it, or during the game Sundays I'm watching, taking notes and things
game
like that.
Game day?
But game day, no. But
no.
Mondays,
I'm too busy.
Mondays I'm good. Sunday
I'm focused
morning.
On game day. Coach would have loved me as a player. He would have loved me as a player.
Yeah, you're
I'm crazy and I'm focused.
Yes, and intense. Very intense.
Always. All right, let's go. Martin Johansson says Eli is the perfect QB for the G-men as a person. He doesn't care what people say or think. Watch Geno, and you will see the opposite. Of course, referring to the Jets, Geno Smith, who lost his cool the other day with a fan.
I didn't even see what happened. I heard about it. I wasn't aware.
Used an expletive as a fan was berating him coming off the field.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it wasn't a good thing.
Well, that's going to happen in the Jets Nation at some point.
Let's see. We also have, Corey, who says, Eli looks poised. Well, he certainly looks a lot better the last few weeks than he did at the beginning of the season.
As long as he looks, I always look at the feet. As long as he looks comfortable, his feet are good, he's opening his hips, and he's falling through with his throws. I mean, I sound like Ron Jaworski now, but that's what you want out of a quarterback position. And we can't say enough, Paul, about how well this group, this offensive line has played to this point.
They've been terrific.
When
after
thought,
the Detroit game,
yeah,
which was really
game.
Ugly.
And you know, and they have to have that period of adjustment. And when we thought it was going to be Schwartz at left, maybe Mosley at right, JD at center, or Richburg, however that played out, that's what you thought it was going to be. So the interior three are starters that no one thought that would be the combination, and they're playing well. That makes it better for Schwartz and Mosley and the guys behind them. So, I mean, I could honestly say right now the Giants have probably 8 offensive linemen that could start and play well, but we're happy with the production of the five guys that are in there.
I am surprised by two of the five. I am surprised that John Jerry
yeah.
has done what he's done over the last several weeks. I will tell you this. I'd like to see him run block better
right.
and use his physicality more.
Because
he's a better pass
a
protector
yeah,
than he is a run
guy.
Blocker.
Yeah.
But I am pleasantly surprised at how well he has come along. And I'm also very surprised at how Will Beatty has come back from a broken leg and a knee injury and been as efficient as he has been. I've only got him down, giving up half a sack so far. And that's a
– We want quiet Will Beatty. We don't want to hear his name. We don't want penalties.
Stay out of the headlines, Will.
Yeah. Have a quiet about 12, maybe 15 more games, and he'll be in good shape.
All right, a couple more here. Anthony Phoenix wants to remind me it's the green zone, not the red zone. Coach Coughlin still sticks with that green zone thing.
I still say red zone, but I'll accept. Look, call it whatever you want. As long as you go like this and you get there about five times a game, you can do that.
And Antoine Buxton says, if Beckham plays on Sunday, what are the chances of seeing five wide sets, with him, Randall, Cruz, Washington, and Donnell? I'd say about a zillion to one.
Yeah.
How about that?
Let's put away the playbook and let's just watch the game.
Five wide? No. Holy smokes.
You can watch Oregon or one of these high school teams. Or
Antoine, you've been playing too much Xbox.
Yeah, no,
okay?
Five wide. That doesn't work in the NFL.
There you go. All right, let's see if we can get back to some phone calls here. We have anybody else on the line? I got to go back to Shay from North Carolina. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing?
Hey, Shay.
Hey, good. Just a quick question. I know Jennings is the man right now. I mean, he's doing great as far as stats or anything like that. And I know Williams is the young guy, and they're trying to build him for the future of the team. But I think the most underrated guy is Hillis. I mean, he can block, he can catch out of the backfield, he can knock guys over. Why are we not seeing as much as him?
Well, the production between Williams and Jennings has been stellar the last 2 weeks. Why would you mess with that? But I will tell you this. Peyton Hillis the last couple weeks has made two blow-up tackles on special teams
right.
on kickoff coverage. So he has found another way to help this team, and I'm glad the Giants kept him.
Yeah.
I really am.
Right. I am too. And again, and with these fans, just like the Corey Washington question, I mean, look, there's only one football on the field. And the guys that are supposed to get it done, Jennings in the backfield with Williams, Hillis is a compliment. I mean, hopefully no injuries happen. You want to see more Hillis, but I want Jennings to get 20, 25 carries a game. I want Andre Williams to get 10 if he can.
25 out of Jennings? That's a lot.
20.
I don't want to see him get more than 20.
20-ish. 18 plus. Anywhere north of 18 carries, I'd love to see that. Andre Williams, I'd love to see 10, 15 carries.
That's fine.
Hillis, unless you're running the ball 40 times, 45 times in a game,
right.
I mean, that's where you'll see Hillis. So it's never about getting in another guy into the rotation. If the formula is working, you want to keep feeding that formula. This is never about getting another guy a carry so that he could be featured more, just like the Corey Washington discussion. So I think fans need to always look at that. In terms of why don't we see this guy more? If it's working, the team's playing well, you don't just bring a guy in just to put him in. But obviously, Peyton Hillis definitely does do well as a change of pace. He doesn't have the burst that he had at his prime. He doesn't run through tackles like he did in his prime.
He's pretty powerful, though.
But when he has 5-10 yards of steam downhill, that's when he's dangerous. He's not going to burst through the line of scrimmage, but with good blocking and what this offensive line's been doing over the last few weeks, you know, you could put. Peyton Hillis is in terms of like, I was comparing him to Mike Allstott, not because he's a white running back, but I blocked for Mike Allstott.
I'm serious.
People do that. They compare players to other players for those kind of reasons. But, you know, Mike Allstott had, when you got into the line of scrimmage and he had 5, 10, 15 yards of momentum,
right.
just like Brandon Jacobs, you just want to get out of his way when he's coming. So Peyton Hillis goes in that category. But so does Jennings. So does Andre Williams. So we all have, the Giants have similar. Attack a certain type of running back that
Thanks,
goes downhill.
Thank you for
runners.
The call, Roman.
I'll get off my soapbox.
No, that's all right. That's all right. But it's important to understand. I think even more than what you said about his traits and attributes,
right.
is that Tom Coughlin wants to know that he's got a guy on the bench who he can trust.
Exactly.
Peyton Hillis understands the offense, and if he's got to go in there in an injury situation. Coach knows he understands. He knows the plays. He's not going to go in there and have brain lock. He knows that Peyton Hillis can go in. He can pass protect, okay? He can get the short yardage if you need the short yardage. He can catch the ball.
He's a great catcher.
Okay, he's got hands. So he provides all of these security blankets or the comfort that coach needs so that if somebody does have to come out of the game, he doesn't have to worry about, uh-oh, if we put him in, we can't do this, this, or this because he doesn't have those skills.
Right.
That's not the case with Peyton Hillis. That's why he's a really valuable backup, at least to me.
Yeah, and I think Andre Williams can learn from a Peyton
Hillis
in terms of just in pass receiving.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that could help Andre
Williams. And blitz pickup, too.
Right.
Peyton Hillis, he's such a good guy and so appreciative of being here. Don't think that's not part of it, too. I remember years ago, Otis Anderson was a mentor to Rodney Hampton when Rodney came here to the Giants. I mean, he looks at Otis like a big brother.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a reason for that. Parcells knew that O.J. was the kind of guy who would take Hampton under his wing and help nurture him, teach him how to be a pro and how to get better. That's also part of a dynamic sometimes when you have guys on your roster. You know, it's not always just about the stats. There are other intangibles, too.
Right.
Finn from New York, you're next on the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi. Good.
Hey, I just wanted to make two quick points, and I'm just going to get off and listen. I think, one, the Giants will play extremely well against the Falcons. I think a run will definitely set up the pass. And, you know, I really want to see Odell Beckham play. So what I'm going to say next might contradict what I'm saying now, but I kind of don't want to see him play until maybe after the bye, and I'm going to tell you why. Now, the way he re-injured his hamstring so fast, I just don't want to see him in there just yet. That's one. And I don't want to see him play the Eagles or the Cowboys because it'll be his first few games, and I know they're going to come at him hard. And it's going to be those hits that's going to be like, oh, welcome to the division type of hits. So I just want to hear you guys' opinion on those. I'm just listening in right now, so I don't know if you went over it earlier. But
Thank you. I don't think I don't think Odell Beckham would want to shy away from NFC East Division competition.
That'd be heck of a bad way to start your career by being identified as a guy who was shying away. That would be really bad.
And the organization would be
looking at him. They're not going
to
do that.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. If he's ready to go, he's going to go. It doesn't matter if you're playing the Cowboys, the Eagles, or the Little Sisters of the Poor. It doesn't matter. I mean, this guy's a first-round pick, and you want him on the football field because that's going to help the team win.
And let's make something very clear to you. Okay, the Giants right now are in the middle of a dogfight in this division.
Right.
All hands on deck for those two games coming up after Atlanta against Philadelphia and Dallas. You would be absolutely out of your mind to go in shorthanded if you have a weapon that you think can help.
Right.
I mean, this is not a situation where you could afford to pull back or, quote, take it easy in a certain game. You can't do it. In fact, that's one of the reasons why Beeson is so important here because – he's going to play now Sunday, it looks like. If he aggravates that toe again, now you don't have him for Philly or maybe Dallas.
Right.
I'm telling you, I'm not saying they got to hold him out against Atlanta, but they got to be careful here.
And I don't want to see him go in there and play 50 snaps like he did against Detroit. I mean, that's the issue for me. Obviously, he was cleared to play and did a great job, but playing in Detroit, I think, hurt him because he hasn't played since then. But again, I don't know the injury. I'm not a doctor, obviously. He was able to play. He played and did well. But I'd like to see him just second down get off the field or just coming on third. Whatever works well for Perry Fuel.
Yeah.
So that it gets from there and better. It's 10, 20 snaps, 40 snaps, whatever. Next week, 50. Week three for him. Play, have a bye week, rest again, heal it up. Now go on the rest of the season. I mean, that's what you want to see out of John Beeson.
Yeah, because he's already played two games, missed the last two.
Yeah.
Here's what I will say, folks. While Roman and I think, are pretty much convinced the Giants are a better team than Atlanta. Now, we're not going to be on tomorrow. I guess it's Beagles and either John or Lance. I'm not sure who's doing the show tomorrow. But this is our last go-around, our last minute or so before we sign off. The Giants cannot afford to take anybody lightly. Let's make something very, very clear, okay? In this quicksand of NFL parity, what you have to do is separate yourself and grab the rope and pull yourself out of that quicksand. The Giants have started to do that the last 2 weeks. They need to continue to do that because if you goof around and throw away a game against an Atlanta Falcons team on Sunday, you will regret that for the rest of the season. They're already regretting the Cardinals' loss. So they got to take care of business.
Right.
You can't waltz past anybody in this league. They need to go out and do what they need to do well, put this game away, and then move on to the two division opponents.
Right, 100%.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we are here Monday to Friday, every day, Big Blue Kickoff Live. You've got the entire roster of Giants announcers who rotate. It's 12 o'clock noon to 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, again, every weekday. For Roman Oben, I'm Paul Dottino. We'll see you again next time on Big Blue Kickoff Live.